This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. As we talk about the auto industry, the Detroit Three, it's way too easy to forget that these enormous companies began as scrappy little startups birthed by innovators who weren't afraid to set the status quo on its proverbial ear. An electrical engineer named Henry Ford was one such innovator. In 2015, a South African-born genius named Elon Musk is another. A co-founder and chief executive of Tesla Motors recently spoke to the Automotive World News Congress. It was held during the recent auto show in Detroit. And my next guest thinks the auto establishment did not give Musk the attention and the respect that he deserves. Kevin Kreese laid out his thoughts in a piece for Model D. Its title, Can Detroit Re-Revolutionize the Auto Industry, or is Elon Musk beating us to it? Good to have you back on Stateside, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Before we dive into what Musk had to say when he spoke last month in Detroit, would you set the stage for us, as you do in your story, by reminding us of how Henry Ford was a disruptor?
Yeah, we love this word disruption now. And I think we sort of have these images of the West Coast, of Silicon Valley. HBO even made a show about, you know, disruption pretty much, right? Mm-hmm. That's really the roots of Detroit. And so we have this conversation often is, what is sort of Detroit now? Do we want to become like Silicon Valley? No, we just need to sort of remind ourselves, look in the history books of what we were at the turn of the century. And we were this scrappy town that had a lot of money from sort of the lumber industry and whatnot. And we had young people that were playing with different ideas. And that's really what Henry Ford was. He was a young electrical engineer, and he had these wild ideas of sort of motorizing a bike, and he shared it with Thomas Edison at dinner one night.
And Edison said, do it.
Yeah, yeah, but it was this big dinner. You know, there's maybe 20 people at this dinner, and he was nervous, and he shared this idea, but fortunately, Edison really affirmed him and encouraged him to keep pursuing it.
Which he did, but as you point out so skillfully in your piece for Model D, he fell on his nose more than once before finally arriving at what has become the Ford Motor Company.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, a great piece of trivia is he actually founded what became Cadillac, which is obviously the luxury brand for General Motors, mm-hmm. a competitor to Ford. But
yeah,
that's a whole other story.
We digress. But he wasn't afraid to, one, be brash, and number two, fail on the way to what is ultimately success. And then we go to Elon Musk, born in South Africa, a Canadian-American entrepreneur, investor, and engineer. And he was wearing his hat as co-founder and chief executive of Tesla when he spoke in Detroit. And you and others call him the Henry Ford of our time. Why?
He's just a poignant leader right now. He's provocative. He's energetic. He says things that no one else is willing to say. He likes stirring the pot. He likes comparing himself to other prominent CEOs of past. Some see that as arrogant. Other people see that as sort of exciting. And I think he has the brashness to think he can create whole new industries or revolutionize them, one being finance with PayPal, two being solar energy and really moving that industry forward, then taking an anemic NASA and really changing that whole – the story about what he's done there is incredible, really, and now with Tesla.
And what was his message? What did you hear him say that day?
Well, what's so exciting is when you start following the auto industry a little closer than the average person is that it's often just this dogfight over market share. You know, everyone's trying to get 0.25% more of market share every year, or maybe 0.5%. But it's sort of these entrenched brands battling over market share. And then here you have Elon Musk. He stands up and he has no speech. He has no prepared notes. He stands up and he says, I'm here today to talk with you guys a little bit and help move the electric car industry forward. My whole goal, as stated in the beginning of Tesla, is not to dominate the world's auto industry, but to move the electric car industry forward because right now it's stalled. And then he sits down and we have this long-winded conversation, which is full of incredible details. And he talks for over an hour and he's very open about all these different things of the company that other CEOs are secretive. And that's sort of this culture that regionally we've developed is this secretive culture of not working together, siloed relationships, battling over market share. It's just not sort of an exciting, innovative, open, collaborative culture, it seems.
And how was he received, do you think?
Well, you know, Automotive News did a fantastic job with the event. The interview I thought was done really well. But when you looked around the room, it was mostly male, mostly older males of Caucasian ethnicity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there was just a sense of grumpiness to it, you know, not an excitement, not sort of this energy of change that I think a younger generation of people like myself are excited by.
You use the word respect, that he didn't get the respect that you felt he deserved.
It's hard to put a finger
yeah.
on it,
yeah.
but Elon Musk was in town speaking. Like, this was a big deal. This, I mean, if Steve Jobs came to town to talk about this, we would be writing articles upon articles and going bananas over this. But we didn't do that with Elon. You know, there was intrigue. There were some articles written, mm-hmm. more than there would have been 6 months ago. You know, I don't think it's as big of a deal as it needs to be.
So based on what you saw that day at the Automotive World News Congress, do you think that young innovator Henry Ford, had he been speaking to that crowd, do you think he would have gotten the same response as Elon Musk got?
Oh, man. I mean, Henry Ford was very provocative. If you look into sort of his behavior, mm-hmm. his public statements, the way he worked with the press, he definitely loved the limelight. I mean, I think that's why there's a lot of similarities between him and Elon.
But that young innovator, that young electrical engineer got up there with his ideas.
Well, you know, when you have that frustration with a culture or a lack of reception, it only empowers you more to want to change it. And I think that's what differentiates someone who wants to be a manager of a company and someone who wants to really start a company to change things, is that that culture actually breeds a desire to disrupt it, which is why you're seeing these mobility companies really take off outside of the headquarters of transportation, mobility being Detroit, because they see that and they're so frustrated by the experience that we have when we try to buy a car, the current feature sets of cars, sort of the lack of change in a lot of ways, of the slowness to change in the automotive industry. I think so that's why you're seeing all these outside firms enter the space, like Uber and whatnot. There is just a huge opportunity, and they can't wait to disrupt it. I mean, Travis, the founder of Uber, he just salivates at disrupting the automotive industry. I mean, that's all he thinks about.
In the title for your story, Can Detroit Re-Revolutionize the Auto Industry, or is Elon Musk baiting us to it? What do you mean by re-revolutionize?
Well, when you look at what was happening with the automotive industry at the turn of the century, you know, when all the car companies, everyone was starting to jockey for position, I mean, change happened relatively quickly in that period of time then. I mean, bikes didn't take off till the 1880s, which is mm-hmm. wild. Most people, I think, would assume that it was way before that. But bikes were just becoming hot. They were seen as a fad. People were starting to play with electrifying bikes. You know, the first car actually was created in Des Moines, Iowa, not in Detroit. Well, and how we understand the car, right?
Sure, sure.
And there was different reasons for how these industries took off. But really what happened is locally, investors decided they wanted to own this new nascent industry, and they poured money into it. And so we were able to lock down that early position. So right now we see this mobility space taking off. Owning a car, I would argue for the most part, not really enjoyable for the majority of people. They just don't really love it. If you have a lot of money and you can buy a luxury product, then that's a different conversation, but that's not the masses. And so since we have this unenjoyable experience, this whole new world of solutions are coming into the fold to get rid of car ownership. And that's the opportunity we have to move from a single car ownership sort of concept of mobility to really a multimodal network of sort of on-demand service of different forms, from using bike sharing to car sharing to car rental, all these things coming together. And so that's sort of what we mean by re-revolutionizing.
Getting back to what you heard Elon Musk talk about in his push for electric vehicles, and I'm going to open up and share my technology. Let's move this forward. Might we also note that for the auto industry, it has been a bumpy ride as they've tried to roll out their EVs. And certainly the government, the Obama administration, predicted 1 million EVs would be on our highways by this year. And we've got, what, something around 30,000. So can you force the public to take something that is seems to be, except for some exceptions, pretty lukewarm about?
Well, this revolution in this re-revolution of mobility mm-hmm. is really, there's so many different parts of the conversation. Electric vehicles are one. But in my opinion, really this larger conversation about mobility is the more interesting one. You have Uber. Uber's not using electric cars. Well, you know, some Ubers are, but mm-hmm. it's not, what's driving that change is not electric cars. It's this getting rid of car ownership and moving towards, you know, a subscription model. Imagine just signing up and you just get unlimited use of a car service for a month. These are the things that are changing. You can use, you know, mm-hmm. internal combustion engines there. We don't need these new technologies. But those new technologies, when they all come together, that's where we see this huge revolution. That's where we see the cost of maintaining a car and using a car plummets when you have an electric car. So these costs start to come down, these network effects of using iPhones, these models of getting rid of ownership. All of these things are swelling together to create this huge tidal wave.
What do you think is the price that the auto industry, I'll use all in capital letters, the folks that you saw kind of with their arms crossed, kind of mm-hmm. regarding Elon Musk and his ideas with, we'll say, not so enthusiastic and quite skeptical. What price do you think they could pay for that?
Oh, my goodness. It's monumental. And this is, I think, the sort of fear that is a very real possibility in the relative near future, because the problem that we have is that we have these entrenched incumbents that are used to change taking a long period of time. You know, ABS braking, I don't know, took 30 years or something like that to fully roll out to all cars. So we think that this is how long change takes. But we are not understanding that change is now exponential with networks and the internet and how the internet speeds communication and all these different things. So adoption is going to shift rapidly. And so right now, a big point that the automotive space uses to talk about this, how this change is not to be feared, relatively speaking, we have a long runway because it's going to take a long time. For this morning, quote, at 230 million used cars on the road in the world, it's going to take a long time to change that. But what that doesn't understand is it's not taking into account that what happens if we really start deciding just stop owning cars. Look at the growth of Uber. It's incredible the markets they're reaching. I mean, they're moving into rural markets now. You have the great, you know, critic who says, oh, what about the rural town? That doesn't matter. Like, they are moving into those markets. And there's a reason that they're valued at 2/3 of, you know, the market cap of Ford. Like, this isn't a surprise. These changes are happening. And the fallout for Detroit, when you talk about the impact, is immense, because we think it's bad when the inner city has blight and abandoned homes of job loss. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you look at the metrics over the years, we just didn't really have any growth over 50 years. Pretty much people just moved to the suburbs and they abandoned the core. Well, what were all the people in the suburbs doing for jobs? They're working for the automotive industry. And when you get rid of this car ownership model, guess what? You only need a fraction of the cars to meet peak demand in these subscription model services. In fact, a study was done on Ann Arbor. When you look at the total amount of trips taken by all car drivers in Ann Arbor, they found that they could meet the peak demand of all the trips. Everyone could be happy in this sort of future model of subscription with only 15% of the cars currently used. An 85% decline in units? Oh my gosh, we should be freaking out about that.
Kevin, what kind of conversations do you hope that your piece in Model D will prompt?
What got me excited about this is the collision of all these different trends coming together. And then I grew up in this city that is dominated by the auto industry. And we talk about revitalization of the city and the state. But we're forgetting, how do we actually revitalize in terms of creating jobs and an economy? What are the growth areas? And we see the automotive as this older area that we actually are insecure about. We're actually ashamed that we depended on – we were a one-horse economy, and we hate that. But we're not realizing that that one-horse economy is completely changing right now and provides a lot of new opportunities to build whole new companies off of. And so my hope really with the piece is to talk about this new economy that's growing, that's forming, the inherent advantages we have locally, and to really get everyone together to start getting excited about this.
Writer Kevin Kreese. His piece on Elon Musk can be found at modeldmedia.com. Kevin, always great to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you.